Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Today, we are going to be talking about the upcoming weather conditions, kind of, that we're experiencing across different parts of the state. So today, I'm Taylor Grusing, cow-calf field specialist, based out of the Mitchell office, and Parker is here as well. Parker, you want to reintroduce yourself to the team?
Yeah, Parker Witt. I'm out of the Watertown Regional Center here, and I do crop livestock integration as my specialty.
Awesome. So yeah, we don't have any invited speakers today, but it is mid-May right now. And being in the, upper Midwest, but South Dakota specifically for our listeners, we're experiencing kind of two different weather situations, right? So basically the southern half, or definitely the southern third of South Dakota, is in either mostly D2 or D3 drought conditions. But up in Parker's neck of the woods, things are looking pretty good. Even in way up in the northeast corner and north central, I know they're extremely wet still. And so trying to get into the fields and trying to protect, fields and pastures for a different reason. But we're going to focus more on the drought side today, just to try to get some timely resources out to you guys, stuff to think about and talk about, as we are normally maybe turning out cows to pastures right now, and the grass is really, really short. We've had plenty of growing degree days. It's been hot for May, right? So, we have 80 degree days one day, 50 degrees the next, and then 40 mile an hour winds the next day. So I know quite a few producers, myself included, that are delaying turnout to our cool season pastures even. We know that we probably want to get those forages clipped off before they head out, but they are just so severely short right now and behind moisture that we're delaying our turnout a little bit and trying to extend the grazing days for what we will have. With that kind of, maybe to kick things off, or back to you, Parker, how do we, or is what's the best way to adjust that stocking rate? Like, I can go by calendar date and, or just, walk out there and say, it's probably not tall enough, but what are some other metrics we can use, I guess, to kind of look at that stocking rate measurement?
Yeah, and it's sad. I wish that what we're talking about right now was a little bit more anomalous. I've worked in the field for about 10 years, and it seems like I can count on one hand how many are decent years for grazing. So this is becoming increasingly the new normal. And when I say normal, it's a subjective term based on where you are, what you're growing, what the community composition of your pastures are looking like. And we try to apply these generic, broad rules of thumb to grazing management. And the honest answer is, if you've been doing it long enough, you know exactly what you're looking at and you know how to set the stocking rate accordingly. We'd like to try to put numbers to it. What I like to tell people is that if you're familiar with using a grazing stick, clip plots are a little bit better, but the grazing stick is what I use. It's much easier, it's much, much quicker. Usually we're assuming that for every inch of forage that you have growing out there in our cool season pastures, we're usually looking at about 215 pounds of dry matter. But the rules completely go out the window when you have a drought year like this. And the same can be said if you have a high moisture year. High moisture, your forage goes up, so you're going to have more than 215 pounds. Low moisture, obviously you have spindly little stems of grass out there, so you're going to be looking at quite a bit less. So in a year like this, I would recommend that people assume at the upper end, you're looking at about 175 pounds of forage per inch. And you're going to want to be a little bit more conservative when it comes to how much you're actually taking off. So the take half, leave half rule, I'm sure most people are familiar with that. It seems to be the gold standard that everybody adheres to. That completely goes out the window when it comes to these drought years. 50% utilization works great in a normal year. You can go a little bit higher than that if you have high moisture. But under this moderate drought that we're seeing, so your D2 conditions, I would shy away from anything above 40% utilization as a target. And if you go into severe drought, like so many people in the southern portion of the state are, I would really, really be cautious to go above 30% utilization if you're even using that pasture at all. We're getting to the territory, especially down in the south and the southwest portion of the state, where we're going to see a lot of folks who have pastures that don't get grazed hardly at all this year. which isn't the end of the world because you want that forage out there in case you have to go in for emergency haying later on. But 30 to 40% for most of our area right now is probably where we're at. 30% and under if you're down in that southern part of the state and you're really hitting being hit by the drought pretty hard would be my recommendation, but it's very subjective. So
Right.
being
So if,
conservative minded with it, it's everything.
right. Yeah. So going in, maybe not at all, is, probably the best for it, but right, not always realistic for people. Especially depending on how feed resources are. I know this winter I was talking to several people at events and, they were going to be short on feed just even from last year being a little bit dry. Dugouts never fit or were emptied out last year, and they definitely didn't refill. And so that's another thing to think about too is water. Don't think that forage is the only thing limiting, but obviously if there's no water, and we even look at hauling water, which we'll talk about in a little bit, some of the economics of that. If there's no water, there's little forage too. So it's kind of a double-edged sword of yes, there's a little bit of forage out there. Could you be out there for a little bit to snip it off and the chance that we get a rain and then it's still vegetative enough to go? But I know a lot of the range folks are already saying, we're so far behind that even if we catch an inch or two in the next 2 weeks of May, we're still so far behind on that water table that we're not going to catch up this year, and we want to try to protect it for years to come, because this pasture will still be there next year. But if the roots are damaged, we're going to have a longer impact than just a 1 year drought.
Yeah, it's not all doom and gloom. If there's one thing that our, especially our range pastures, are good at, they're resilient. They're used to this drought. They're used to the stress that we can put on them. The scary and the concerning part for me is that when you have these drought conditions, it opens the door for a whole bunch of issues outside of the health of the pasture as a whole and the health of the herd. If you have drought conditions and you need forage and you go out there, even if you snip it off at that 30 to 40% rate that we were talking about a moment ago, you're still opening the door for a lot of your invasive species that can move in, your kochias, your thistles, everything like that. So just proceed with extreme caution when you're doing that. And if you are going to go into pastures, try to shy away from the areas that already have any kind of weed encroachment because that's just going to exacerbate the issue and create bigger headaches down the road when we have decent wet years, and we're going to see a lot more of them coming up.
Sure. Yeah. So, like I said, not all doom and gloom. So, if we say, yeah, we got to cut cr stocking rate of the pastures, what's our other options? Like I said, lots of people are not turning out yet, so pairs are still in some sort of a dry lot. Yearlings, obviously, bulls, anything that can be grazed, and so keeping those in a little bit longer and feeding them into the warm weather is an option, if we have feed resources available. Yes, the pairs are, lactating, right? And so we got to make sure our rations are going to meet that lactation requirement. But with the increase in temperatures, intakes, might go down slightly as we get into the summer. So, having a conversation with your nutritionist, feed stuffs are still pretty cost effective. I haven't seen a drastic increase in distillers price. Hay, corn stalks are, can still be grazed potentially if you didn't get out there yet. We can do some supplemental feeding on, some of those acres, just to keep those calves healthy. And out there. But I was talking to a producer yesterday. He normally does some heifer development, breeds some heifers for sale, that would go out to grass. And so he's going to be looking at keeping them in a lot. And right now, the custom rate that this guy was looking at, for example, and I think tracks pretty well, was anywhere from $2 to two and a quarter per head per day, including feed and yardage, for a yearling heifer. So those stalkers are usually the first thing to go. For the heifer situation where, these were breeding heifers, maybe he still might change his mind and not do that. But that's definitely an option. Grass kind of tracks around that, per AUMs or per, excuse me, animal units per day. So not terribly out of line. Like I said, if feed resources get really expensive, it might be something to recalculate, but definitely an option for dry lotting pairs if we
Yeah,
need to.
no, without a doubt. And just prior to hopping on here, actually, I pulled a couple of numbers from some of the different hay markets we have around the state, and we're fortunate that we haven't seen feed prices increase dramatically quite yet. We're looking at mixed hay and grass somewhere around 125 and excuse me, somewhere around $125 a ton as an average. And then you get into the higher quality alfalfa and you're looking about 140 to 160 average, depending on where you're going. If you're looking for hay markets, Northern Plains Forage Association on their website, they have a phenomenal resource where they'll showcase all the different hay markets around the state and the prices that they currently have, what they have available in stock. So we're lucky that we haven't seen the market get hit too terribly hard by this drought yet, but we can only assume that unless the tap turns on, it's probably going to come at some point.
Right. And kind of back to the custom feeding, I mean, obviously Nebraska, I know, is very dry as well. But South Dakota is just kind of the southern half. So there are some opportunity not that far away, like even in the northern half of just South Dakota, to possibly look at having someone feed those cattle for you, whether it's short term, long term. And just having some options, like maybe they have abundant feed, maybe the opportunity arises to start them up there, and then if you catch some rain later in the fall, we can talk about planting some annual forages that might be able to capture, some of that rainfall if we do get up to that point. But kind of with all this, if we're looking at either feeding in dry lots, buying more feed, hauling feed, hauling cattle, or even hauling water. There are some federal programs available that are probably going to kick in for these such disasters. So we are going to talk a little bit about ELAP, program that's available for producers to apply for. Emergency assistance for livestock, honeybees, and farm-raised fish is technically what the program's called, available through the FSA office and USDA. I know a lot of people have probably already used this in the past, but just something to keep in mind and start having that conversation. If you are looking at, like, for example, hauling water, they've published some rates that will refund producers up to 11 cents per gallon for hauling water to livestock. Again, grass and forage has to be available at the resource and in the county that you're hauling it to. But that's just one number that was recently published for these 2026 payment rates, as well as the livestock and feed transportation, $3.75 per loaded mile. Also subject to your actual operating costs. I think I saw about 60% of your actual operating costs too. So keep that in mind. Might not be these exact numbers, but there is some assistance out there to help.
Yeah, and the best way to get that information is contacting your local FSA office and speaking to them directly. Something we're probably a little bit more familiar with than ELAP, the Livestock Forage Disaster Program. Seems like every other year we're talking about this. I pulled some numbers from their 2026 rates today. So that is retrospective after the grazing season. I believe you have 30 days, the following, excuse me, 30 days of the following calendar year to be able to apply for it. But that is contingent on what level of drought you're in for how long. So if you're in an area during the grazing season in D2 for 8 weeks or 2 months, you can receive one monthly payment. If you're in D3, you can immediately receive three monthly payments. And if you're in D3 for over a month, then you're eligible for four monthly payments. And this is just a per head payment. So for adult cattle, the 2026 rate is $31 a head. For five weights and up, it's $23 a head. And then for five weights and below, you're looking at about $16 a head. Again, take these numbers with a grain of salt. Contact your local FSA office directly for more accurate information, but that's what we're able to come up with from the folks that we talk to. And with any luck, we won't have to talk about this too much in the future. I'm still optimistic that the tap is going to turn on. I'm lucky that we're in the northwest part of the state where we're blessed with a little bit more moisture right now. So I'm trying to push some of that down further south and further west. Call it optimistic, but I've seen a lot of years where we have crazy drought at the very beginning and then the tap turns on and it seems like it's business as usual from there. So, not all doom and gloom, I promise.
Right. Yeah. So pastures might be affected early on, right? That's our first forage or range that most folks will go to. Stockpiled forages are awesome if you have them available. Not everyone has that option. So if we start talking about maybe the cropland side, we might be able to flex some acres away from corn and beans if they're not already planted yet. I was just on a previous meeting, and that sounds like about at least 50% of the corn is planted in the U.S. according to NAS. But there's still some options there, right? Like we got a couple shots of rain in the dry regions to help it get going. And if the economics aren't quite there for corn, or if the economics aren't quite there even for you to hay it, we might be looking at planting some annual forages or some cover crop, but that's contingent on rain too. So how do we set ourselves up to catch these rains? I always tell myself it's not going to grow in the bag. So, I want to throw something out there, but what are our options that we want to consider, Parker?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I want to share with people is that it's not too late, and it's almost never too late to be able to use annual forages as a tool. I'm a forage agronomist by trade. I cut my teeth working with corn and soybeans and fell in love with the forage world because it opens up so many more opportunities for people to do so many more fun and interesting things with them. And this drought preparedness is one of the most important ones out there because, unlike your traditional row crops, you've got a much wider planting window for a larger variety of species out there. They all come with some caveats. Don't get me wrong, but for the most part, you're never going to be left high and dry if you still maintain some open acreage where you can plant something out there. So we've passed the point where a lot of our cool season mixes are going to be successful if you plant them. If you were to throw any cool season out there right now in the hot, dry conditions, you'd be lucky to get any stand establishment whatsoever. Unless, of course, the tap turns on, we get a little bit of rain. But we're still a little bit early when it comes to planting some of our warm season mixes. And the warm season mixes are really our saving grace when it comes to these hot, dry years because they throw incredible biomass, good nutrition, and they do it in conditions that would snuff out most other crops. So we're talking about your sorghums, your millets, your Sudan grasses, things like that. And a lot of times we're looking at right around the first week in June for planting. And with any luck, we get a little bit of moisture hit around there. I know that we've got some in the forecast coming up at the end of the week. So with any luck, we'll have some opportunities here. And it's not a bad idea to get those into the ground before the rain turns on so that they're ready to rock and roll when the time actually comes. But some things to be considerate of when it comes to your warm seasons, especially your sorghums and especially your millets, are they're going to come with their own set of problems when it comes to toxicity. So the big one that we always talk about are nitrates. And nitrates are, it's kind of the black box of agronomy, is what I like to tell people, because it depends on so many things. Your fertilizer history, the rate, the timing, what the previous crop was, how much moisture you got, the vapor pressure deficit. I mean, there's so many different factors that play into it. So at the end of the day, my best suggestion for anybody who's going to be doing any kind of grazing on cropland is test your forages. It's really easy. It's very cheap. In some cases, it's free at most of the regional centers, soon to be all of the regional centers here in South Dakota through SDSU. We're going to be offering free nitrate testing for anybody who's interested. All you need to do is call us, get us on the horn, explain when you're going to be coming in, what you're going to be testing, and we'll take it from there and we'll be able to make sure that you're set up right. But you just
It's a
want to make
quick
sure
test.
that, yeah,
So
it's a quick test. It's very
yeah,
easy.
it
We
kind of
can do
gives you an
it.
idea of like presence or not. And then we can always help you send it off to another lab.
Yep, and there's lots of labs around, Midwest Labs, Ward, Rock River Labs down towards Sioux Falls. All of these are great options for testing for not only nitrates, prussic acid, any other kind of concern that you might have. But the big one when it comes to drought is going to be your nitrates. And we can test for that in the office really quick. Usually I tell people anything above about 2,000 parts per million nitrates in your forage is cause for concern. It depends on what class of livestock you have grazing it. So if you have pregnant cattle out there, you're going to want to be somewhat lower. 1,500 could be your threshold for that. If you're just running heifers or steers out there, dry cows, 2,000 and above, excuse me, 2,000 and below, you should be good. But if you get above 2,000, that's where you start to really see some issues. Usually you don't see death loss below 3,000, but we don't even want to start that conversation or go that
Right.
direction. So just prepare yourself, be ready to test. It's easy, it's cheap. More than happy to help you out with that. And we see it a lot more in these nitrate issues are typically worse in dried forages. So if you hay it, you're going to have higher concentration because that water is decreased if there's less in there. And then above all else, don't turn out hungry cows onto untested green forage right away because not only are you going to be taking a pretty significant hit to the rumen microbes, they're also not used to the nitrates and the toxicity issues that can come with that forage. So good grazing sense, make sure that there's enough fiber out there that they have some free choice hay if you have some stockpiled so that you're hedging your bet a little bit with that one. And I can't press this one hard enough. Just test, test, test. it's worth it. Cows are expensive, tests are cheap, not worth the risk.
Yeah, and when we say cheap, it's like $20 or less, I believe. And we can get free mailers that will get it there fast as well to a lot of our labs, because that is another kicker too. But if you start sampling now, let's say maybe your oats is probably a little too short, but we had a conversation about grazing wheat. Some of these wheat stands are not very good. Just starting to. Or excuse me, not quite head on wheat yet, but rye is all, getting laid down and chopped in several areas of the country. And maybe the plan was always to chop it, right? Production and biomass probably isn't quite there. But there are some options on some of these even winter forages to go in and graze. But grabbing a quick sample, I like to say kind of a representative sample of what that cow is going to eat, right? She's going to wrap her tongue around it, tear it out. So it's not going to be like flush to the ground, like when sheep maybe graze or eat with their lips, right? Cows can't pick up a kernel of corn. Sheep can, right? That's kind of the difference in their grazing behavior. But just go grab a handful of wheat, walk a diagonal one way or another. If you have fertilizer history on those things, talk to your agronomist, talk to your nutritionist. If you fertilized it for 150 bushel oats, or if you, for example, if we get to that, say, what kind of repercussions do we have to do that? Probably don't necessarily want to swath it, like you said, because that captures the nitrate in there. It doesn't have the opportunity to dissipate out or keep utilizing it as the plant is growing. Is one thing that I usually get questions on of, how can we get the most utilization out of it? Yeah, if you roll it up in a bale and make them eat it all, that's going to give you the most utilization, but that's also a lot more risk than letting them select their own diet in any of these grazing situations, because even the weeds in there might have different toxicities than a pasture weed, even
Big
too.
time, definitely. And honestly, this might be one of the areas where Taylor and I disagree a little bit, but obviously cattle aren't going to be grazing down to the soil surface, so you don't have to worry about nitrates quite as much there. However, I'm a little bit more catastrophic in my sampling style, and nitrates, they like to concentrate at the base of the plant, like right down at the soil level surface. So when I go out and I test for nitrates, I want the worst case scenario. So I like to clip all the
Sure.
way down at the base of that plant, just so that if there is a problem, I know that there's a problem out there for sure, instead of being somewhat more overly idealistic and trying to only take what the cattle would graze itself.
Sure.
Two ways to skin the same cat. You're not really going to go wrong either direction with that one. If there are true nitrate issues, you're going to pick it up no matter where you sample on that plant. But I would always suggest pull down at the base, because if there's a problem, I want to know there's a problem personally. And
Yeah,
then,
and the nodes too, right?
yep, the nodes pretty much anywhere down there at the base of the plant or at a node of a leaf, that's where they like to concentrate. And you're going to have various different nitrate issues specific to each forage species. So, like the biggest one is pearl millet. For whatever reason, pearl millet likes to concentrate nitrates like it's its job. It's a kind of unfortunate because I love pearl millet. It's phenomenal forage. It throws a lot of biomass and it grows through just about anything. But that's one that I would say definitely look out for. Obviously, you've got your sorghums and your stand grasses. And then the cool season side of things, oats, and then some of like your wheat, your barleys, those kind of things, especially if it was planted over winter and it might have used some of that fertilizer from the previous crop year that you might not be taking into account. Definitely check all of those as well. It just gets worse with drought. So test, test, test. That might be the story of this whole podcast.
Right. We didn't talk about testing water yet either, but we also have a total dissolved salts water meter in all of our regional centers and several county offices as well. And so if you're concerned about a stock dam, dugout, whatever you want to call it, just grab a water bottle of water. Doesn't have to be perfectly clean. A jar would be awesome too. Just enough to take a sample into the lab and get that tested. Lots of things can leach from the soil that are different, or as that pond is drying up, and so we can test for that as well. Pretty cheap. It's not going to tell you if it's high in sulfates specifically, for an example, but it'll tell you if it does have higher concentrations of salts in there, and that maybe you want to fence off that water source, or find a different place for them to drink. Rural water taps, wells, maybe not as concerned. I mean, rural water, for example, probably not as concerning to test, should be fine, but wells definitely need to be tested as well.
Yeah, if you've got a dugout that's drying up and getting crusty, you don't need the two of us to tell you that that can be a problem. Usually anything above 5,000 parts per million total dissolved salts, that's going to be where you start to see major concerns. Anything below that, you'll probably be okay, but of course, as it dries up, you're going to see higher concentrations and the ball continues to roll downhill from there. And we can test for that, like Taylor was saying, in the office. That's free. Bring it in. We're more than happy to help you out with that. Sulfates here in South Dakota are a really major, a big issue. And usually we say anything above about 1,000 parts per million in the sulfate world is a major concern. Unfortunately, we don't have the capacity to sample for that directly in our offices here at the regional centers. However, we can help you get those samples sent out to the various labs that we have here around South Dakota and the Midwest as a whole. And it's very cheap, like less than $20 a sample. They do a lot of these. So if you have any concern, especially in your dugouts, definitely check in on sulfates and salinity. And then something that people don't talk about quite as much is nitrates in water. We see nitrates in water just like we see nitrates in plants. That's going to be from runoff from agricultural fields. So if you have a dugout or if you have any kind of a water source that is adjacent to your neighbor's over-fertilized field because they like to try to push yield, that's when you're going to want to test that water for nitrate as well. But if you take one water sample, you can send it in, test nitrates, sulfates, salinity, all those fun things. And then the last one that I like to mention just because I grew up around a lot of ponds. I've got dogs and they like to go swimming in the hot, dry months is blue-green algae. It's a little bit less serious with cattle because of the body size as opposed to if you or I were to drink it or if our dogs were to. But that's something to look for as you go forward. And it's obvious. If you go out there and it looks like there's a green, slimy paint scheme over the top of that water, it might be best to fence it off and just remove that as a risk entirely.
Yeah, those dry dugouts and not only consumption of the water, but even standing in it, for the livestock's not going to help. Trying to whether put its two wires up to keep the calves off of it, because they're going to be the ones sneaking in and grabbing some drinks too. So in that regard, if you do have a water tap out there, maybe making a lower water tank or building up dirt around the water tanks so calves can get access, not only good for overall herd health of those calves, but will definitely help their performance as well. Because if the nutrients are lacking a little bit, the cow's nu nutrient requirements may not be totally being met, so her milking potential might go down. Things like that. So calves do consume quite a bit of water as well, especially if they have access to it. I've seen people use kind of the creek pen mentality of you have like an overflow into a low tank for the calves to get into and or drink, and they can only access that as well. So that's kind of handy, especially if you're in the dry lot situation, making sure the calves can drink the water as well. That's just a kind of a smart thing to do, but not necessarily always easy to accomplish if we are putting calves in more of these dry lot situations. But also on the ration side, those calves are going to start coming to the bunk. Maybe it's a creep feed situation we want to do. Doesn't totally decrease the lactation requirement too much, but research has shown that it does decrease that a little bit. And so they are able to pull nutrients from like a creep feeder or even a bunk area that's specifically only calves can access. That's really important too. So, just some herd health things to keep in mind on the feed and water side if we're looking at keeping these calves in the lot longer. And maybe it's not a specific dry lot. Maybe it's just a overgrazed, calving pasture through the summer. But something that's going to be maybe a little bit harder to manage as we get into some of the hotter, drier months.
Say, Taylor, since we're still talking about dry lotting pairs right now, what do you have on fly control?
Yeah, so that would be another major issue to keep in touch, I guess, on the drought side. So, maybe you don't necessarily do anything more than a pour on normally when you go out to grass, but cattle are moving around more frequently, right? They're able to escape some of those patches of flies, and so it's always good to rotate your mode of administration of your pyrethroids or type of fly control products. So there's pour ons. There's even some fly tags, right? So that's something to keep in mind that might be useful this year to keep them from getting, whether it's pink eye or, just having really low performance due to flies. Calves can get fly tags too. And so the key to those is to apply them at peak or close to peak fly season. So we're maybe not quite there. Flies are coming here in May, but June, July is probably more your heavy load of flies. So delaying putting those tags in because they only have a certain window of efficacy, right? So don't slap them in right now if we're not gonna maybe need them in for a couple of weeks. We could delay that a little bit. But there's also some feed resources as well that can help decrease the fly larvae that are, coming through the animal as well. And so that can kind of be a feedstuff. And that does need to be fed a little bit sooner because it does kind of take a little bit longer process to make it through the animal. So those are some things to definitely keep an eye on because I know pink eye isn't necessarily directly related to flies, but it doesn't necessarily help the case either. So if we can kind of manage flies, that'll be one way to try to keep our herds healthier.
Yeah, that's good advice. And we're fortunate that we live up here in the northern part of the country and we don't have to worry about some of the fly issues that are facing our southern border at the moment. But never a bad idea to keep on top of that stuff. It's difficult for everybody, right?
Right. And mosquitoes, if that's a whole nother can of worms too, is not going to have the same effects like it does in the south, but definitely can all decrease some performance as well.
So I don't want to circle back too terribly much here. We're Taylor and I are just running through a list while we're yapping away right now. But one of the things that I forgot to mention earlier when we were talking about some of our pasture management, kind of going back to the feed side of things, is the difference between like our cool and our warm season pastures and how we measure those and how we actually try to set the stocking rate. So if you don't have cattle in a dry lot situation during these lovely hot dry times we have right now, you're going to want to make sure, like we were saying, that you leave as much forage out there as possible, whether it be that 40% and below, whether it be 40% and above, depends on how much moisture you're getting. But what does that actually look like in an actionable setting? And with like your cool seasons, you're gonna want to make sure you're leaving 4 to 6 inches minimum out there, because that's not only gonna leave enough forage to satisfy that 30 to 40%, that's also gonna prevent your weeds from coming back in. Going back to the conversation we had earlier about kochia and thistle and all the fun ones. And then with your warm seasons, you've got a little bit more biomass there. So you might be closer to that 215 pounds dry matter per inch, but you also need to leave quite a bit more of that standing out there. So that's the 6 to 10 inches of residual forage left out there for your dry, excuse me, your dry season forages. But it's so subjective at the end of the day. Make sure you measure, make sure you test, and make sure that you're erring on the side of caution with everything. That could be the story of everything we're talking about right now.
Right. And we don't want to make a huge list of things for you to do. And we all know you guys are good managers and you're thinking through these options, but don't be afraid to call us. Obviously here at these regional centers, we crisscross across the state every which way, so there's several beef people, several forage people might be coming by your area. If you invite us to come out, we would love to, help you make these decisions in your unique situation because you're not going to have the same situation as your neighbor. And we know that, so some of these forages, maybe you're thinking, I don't have those flex acres available. I only have a certain number of acres of pasture to go to. What are some other those options? There's some networking opportunities as well. There's a grazing exchange available through the South Dakota Soil Health Exchange that kind of may help pair people together. Like Parker was saying, there's never a late time to plant annual forages. And so, some of these wheat acres may be failing. Maybe there's an option to cost share with your neighbor to get some cover crop planted. Maybe they don't have any livestock, or maybe they don't have a need to hay any extra, forages. And so there could be an opportunity for that. So with kind of those type of agreements, we do have some share lease calculators out there. These might be a little bit more unique for seasonal lease calculators, but whether it's an AUM rate, an acre rate, things like that. Does the field have fence? Does it have access to a water tap? Those type of things you want to talk about before you just go, offer to drill the seed and pay for the seed. There's some other logistical things to to think about that are definitely doable, right? Temporary fence is amazing. You can pick it up and move it when you're done. And you can take care of the landowner, take care of your cattle at the same time. So there's lots of opportunities, I think, still. Like, we're not even in June yet. And they're pretty cost effective as well. You know, seed prices, yes, have increased just like everything else. But per ton of, you know, production, or, you know, saving yourself a little bit of labor of feeding cattle, even if it's for 30 days, you know, maybe it's worth trying to find some acres to move cattle off of the onto for a little bit.
Yeah, more often than not, that pencils out pretty well. And great plug for the Grazing Exchange. I like to tell people that it's match.com for cattle. You can go on there and drop a pin where you're located, where your field might be located, and say, I have this herd dynamic, or I have this forage source available at roughly this many pounds of forage per acre, whatever works. And it's a good way to get in contact with people that might not be in your immediate neighborhood. And what I like to tell people about it is that because you can see on the map where everything is located, and if you're willing to take the extra step to drive or haul your livestock into an area that may not be, excuse me, experiencing a severe drought like you are, it's going to impact that per head per day cost. It's going to impact the available forage. It's going to impact the nutrients. So you can plug and play a little bit and see what works best for your situation. And then something that it often seems forgotten about, but it's a huge thing in the forage agronomy world, is that we always forget that chemicals are a thing that we use on our row cropped acres pretty religiously around here. And some of those chemicals like to hang around a little bit, and a lot of them have grazing restrictions. So if you are interested in doing any kind of an annual forage system, regardless of what that looks like, make sure you go back through the past couple of years of your fertilizer and your chemical history, and read the labels carefully. And if you have questions about those, feel free to send them our direction. We're more than happy to help out with that because some of them, especially some that we see in the group fours, have these long residual times and pretty significant grazing restrictions and haying restrictions with them. And the last thing that you'd want to have happen is devote the time, the money, and the effort to planting a nice annual forage plot and not be able to graze it. As much as I like having a very large garden out there, I prefer to see people get what they want out of it. So, just something to be considerate of. But if you have any questions,
Forages have different growth, like, I mean, if there's some inhibitors there, like from withdrawals, like would it even struggle to grow?
yeah, a lot of them would struggle to grow depending on what's thrown out there. And some of the, especially some of the worm seasons, you can get that have resistance, just like our corn or soybeans would to a lot of these chemicals. So, you might not necessarily see it right away. Or if it's not there in a very high concentration, you might not see it. But at the end of the day, if the label has a restriction, that's going to cause issues further down the road. So, easy solution, read the label, understand what's out there, make sure you know what you're going into. And that applies to everything as well. We talk to people year in and year out about grazing restrictions when it comes to corn stalks, because everybody assumes that you can just throw them out in corn stalks and have no issues. In reality, sometimes there's a problem that can come up with it. So, an ounce of preparation is worth quite a bit more at the end of the day.
Right. So kind of plug your agronomy side and your cattle advisors, right, to see what you have out there. And you're not expected to know everything, so don't be afraid
It
to
takes a
ask.
village. It takes a village.
And like you're saying, with those exchanges, you know, if someone else can plant it, you know, even if it's 100 miles away, there's obviously a lot of calculators out there. And so we do have one that is called Move the Cows or Move the Feed. It can kind of help you determine, you know, what it's going to cost to, you know, haul the water every day versus hauling feed, or hauling water and feed every day versus hauling cattle once, maybe to a location that has feed and water. Every situation is going to be different. If you need help finding those on our extension website, just give us a ring or an email, extension.sdstate.edu. If you literally just type in calculator on our search bar, it does a pretty good job of pulling all of those up into one place. And so most of them are Excel-based. I know with everyone's apps, there's probably lots of apps available too. But put a little bit of effort into trying to get the right numbers in there, right? You know, because if you don't put the right numbers in there, it's not necessarily gonna probably give you the right result. you maybe run your own numbers personally that, well, I raise my feed, I have it stacked here, right? So that's an asset to you. But what's the opportunity cost of that feed? Not to say you're going to go sell it, but what did, if you had to buy it from somebody in the same situation, what would the true cost of that be? What's the true cost of starting the tractor and the feeder wagon every day? Do you have to hire someone to specifically do that? And so it's great to see our cattle out our backyard. But if they have to go away for a little while, there's some really good landowners out there that might be able to help us out and have a little bit less stress of getting our cattle fed every day. So those calculators are hopefully handy. Like I said, give us an email or a call at any of our regional centers, and they will find you somebody who can help you through those calculations. Awesome. So we covered a lot of ground. And like Parker said, we're kind of just ran through a list of things we wanted to get out there. We are probably going to have a series of drought meetings in person across South Dakota. So stay in tune to our social channels for any of those. If you're interested in coming, we will be bringing people, hopefully from, like the FSA or, some insurance options, right? So you have practical things to go home with. But we wanted to get this discussion out there sooner than later because we know some of you are making those decisions now on moving the cows or moving the feeds. So, if there's any other topics that come in mind, let us know. We'll try to get them covered. We just kind of want to get this done. And if there's any questions, you can find our contact information at extension.sdstate.edu.
And don't hesitate. Feel free to swing into the office anytime if you have any questions that require a little bit more than a phone call. We're more than happy to help you out there. Both of our contact information, Taylor and myself, is available online. It's just our first dot last name at sdstate.edu. Feel free to give us a ring anytime. We can help you out.
All right. With that, this has been another episode of Cattle HQ. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you have a great spring. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.